From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with this look at local and statewide news. Alaskans can expect to start seeing $1,100 PFD payments at their bank accounts in mid-October, according to the State Department of Revenue. Genevieve Watusek, who's the legislative liaison for the department, says after the governor approves the amount, it takes about 30 days for the state to start pushing the money out.
Yeah, so the Senate passed the bill on September 14th, and the governor signed it on September 15th. We do need about 30 days. We are hopeful for the week of October 11th. We don't have a definitive date at this time, but we're hopeful for that week.
That's for the first round of payments made to people who applied online to receive their PFDs via direct deposit. The second round is for all others, including those who applied using paper applications. Watusek says that round of payments is expected in the last week of October. She says about 85% of eligible Alaskans receive their PFDs by direct deposit. Back and forth over the amount of this year's dividend put into question whether Alaskans would see a PFD at all this year and ultimately delayed the rollout. Payments usually go out first week of October. This year, the PFD office is estimating 640,000 Alaskans will receive dividend payments. A Canadian mining company is exploring claims near the small town of Pelican on Chichagof Island. Millrock Resources CEO Greg Beischer says claims around the historic mines haven't been producing precious metals since before World War II.
There was some work done, geological work in the 1980s, briefly, but it really has been dormant since the mining activity took place in the 20s and 30s.
About 5 years ago, the Vancouver-based company applied to the U.S. Forest Service for drilling permits to renew exploration on the claims that once made up the Apex and El Nido mines, but that never happened because Beischer says they weren't able to find financing. Since then, Millrock has partnered with the operator of Kensington Mine north of Juneau. That's allowed it to take soil samples on claims less than 3 miles from Pelican, which has fewer than 100 year-round residents. The subsidiary of Core Mining invested about $200,000 for a small team of geologists based in Pelican. They crossed the inlet to take soil samples west of town. Beischer says those sample results are pending, but he says geologists hope they will show that the gold-bearing quartz veins continue down the mountain.
And it will hopefully be encouraging enough for our partner to finance drilling to test the quartz veins at lower elevations to see if the gold continues.
The work is only one of his company's roughly half dozen exploration projects in Alaska. He says it's important to keep this in perspective.
Many hundreds, if not thousands, of exploration projects like this start. But the cold, hard reality for us exploration geologists is that not many of the projects actually result in the discovery of a deposit, or especially a deposit that could be mined at a profit.
Some of the claims were staked by Millrock, but the bulk of them are on private land owned by Apex El Nido Gold Mines. That's an Alaska company whose primary shareholder is Anchorage attorney Joseph Henry, a former state commissioner of administration. Every 10 years, states redraw their political district maps to keep them up to date with shifts in population, as reflected in the census. In Alaska, a 5-member redistricting board draws the map. And where the board draws the lines will have big implications on who gets elected. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
The process kicked off earlier this month when the redistricting board produced 2 draft maps. And they drew a lot of criticism during public testimony at a board meeting on Friday. Anchorage resident Emily Becker was among the critics.
Despite your claims to be apolitical, both of these versions seem really nakedly political, with some very odd zigs and zags that just so happen to pit, bipartisan majority members against each other.
Others repeatedly pointed out what Becker called zigs and zags, like in Juneau, where a draft district line clips in the Democratic Representative Andy Story's Auk Bay neighborhood and puts her house in the same district as fellow Democratic Representative Sarah Hannon. In one draft, the bulk of the downtown Anchorage district, currently represented by Zach Fields, added not only the neighborhood immediately south of downtown, but also extended to the west, in the process including the homes of Harriet Drummond and Matt Clayman, like Fields, all Democratic representatives. The same map put Democratic Representatives Ivy Sponholz and Liz Snyder in the same district. The map doesn't have any Republicans who would have to share districts like this. If the board adopts a final map that's similar to this draft, it could wind up in court, and the courts will be holding the map up against the standards in the Alaska Constitution. It says districts have to be compact and contiguous so that all of the parts are next to the other parts, and contain as much as practicable a relatively integrated socioeconomic area. Peter Torkelson is the board's top staff member and a former aide to the state Senate's mostly Republican majority. He says the process that went into the draft maps was not political.
We did not include any political data in this conversation. The board is blind to election results, to party registration statistics, and to incumbent locations. It's just not on the map. And in my experience, it played absolutely no factor in any of the maps that have been brought forward to date.
Of the five board members, three were appointed by Republicans. The process allows for outside groups to submit their own maps, which the public can weigh in on and the board can consider. While many legislators will be keeping an eye on the process, Anchorage Democratic Senator Tom Begich is more involved than most. Not only has he served as an expert witness in court in previous redistricting cycles, his caucus drew up its own proposed map. Begich said the board's draft maps had unnecessarily high differences between the populations in urban districts as well as within Southeast Alaska.
And I'm not sure why that is. So I think a better map can be drawn, and I think that's what the board's looking for. And so I'm hopeful that through the process, a better map will in fact be drawn.
Other groups propose their own maps. It's a complicated undertaking. Anytime one boundary changes, it can force a cascading set of changes on other districts, and it can be challenging to defend those changes. Randy Riedrich has experience working on legislative maps. He's a former Alaska Republican Party chairman who is affiliated with a group that submitted its own map. Like Begich, Riedrich emphasizes that the state will be in a stronger legal position if it keeps district population sizes as close as possible to each other. But his group drew a very different map than the Senate Democrats. For example, he tried to make a case for including a heavily Republican portion of the Kenai Peninsula borough in the same district as part of South Anchorage.
To balance our population, we go back to the 1984 map where the Supreme Court approved the use of South Anchorage and North Kenai Shore as both being oil industry affiliated areas and approved that as adequately economically, socioeconomically integrated district.
Other third-party groups have submitted their own maps. They include a group affiliated with organized labor, public interest, and Alaska Native organizations. Joelle Hall serves as the group's chair. She's also the leader of the Alaska AFL-CIO, the state's labor union federation. Hall said her group would like to see a map that both maintains neighborhood lines in urban areas and that keeps election outcomes uncertain.
Well, the goal is to create a map that is competitive. We think it's Alaskans are best served when the fate of a district is not a foregone conclusion, whereas the competition for ideas is available in each district.
One of the board draft maps keeps five districts in the Fairbanks North Star borough that have larger populations than the state average. Democrats in that region also said it combines areas that have nothing in common. Some groups proposing their own maps are seeking to keep all of the rural Alaska Native communities in the interior in the same district, something that the state's current legislative map doesn't do. They include a coalition with Alaska Native regional corporations Doyon Limited and Otna Incorporated, along with the Tanana Chiefs Conference, Fairbanks Native Association, and Sea Alaska. The coalition's map combines the interior villages with a portion of the Fairbanks North Star borough. Doyon Senior Vice President Sarah Obid said the coalition tried to balance many factors.
Our map represents our best efforts to bring these different needs and interests together.
The board will be taking its own revised draft maps, as well as some of those proposed by other groups, to 20 public meetings around Alaska, seeking public feedback before it adopts a final map later this fall. But that doesn't ensure that the board's final map will remain the legislative map for the next 10 years. The courts may require that it be rewritten based on legal challenges. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
State officials say 46 more Juneau residents and visitors have tested positive for COVID-19. 5 people are being treated for the virus at Bartlett Regional Hospital. The school district reports 2 new people who have tested positive for COVID-19 and were infectious while at school. 1 at Zontakahini Middle School, where all classes are still operating regularly, and 1 at Riverbend Elementary, where the case is still being investigated. In the latest Emergency Operations Center report, city officials say the community is averaging more than 26 new cases a day in September. Statewide, 861 people were identified as COVID-19 positive, and the state reported that 6 more people have died, including 3 men and a woman from Anchorage, a woman from Soldotna, and a woman from Dillingham. So far, 465 Alaskans have died from COVID-19 since the beginning of the pandemic. An outbreak of COVID-19 at Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau shows no signs of improvement. The first case was reported on August 22nd, and since then, 55 inmates have tested positive for the virus. It's not clear how many staff members have tested positive. The state's Department of Corrections doesn't keep track of that or how many staff have been vaccinated. Kelly Good, the deputy commissioner for the Alaska Department of Corrections, says that as of Monday afternoon, the facility is housing 41 COVID-positive inmates. Corrections officials say they're offering COVID-19 vaccines to all new inmates at Lemon Creek, and visitors aren't allowed during the outbreak. Just over 40% of the inmates at Lemon Creek Correctional Center are fully vaccinated. And a quick look at the weather. A pair of storms will move through the panhandle this week, bringing a few rounds of moderate to heavy rainfall and gusting winds. The first is currently moving through the area, and the second and strongest storm is expected on Thursday. That's the latest from the KTOO newsroom. If you're looking for more local and statewide news, you can visit us at ktoo.org. I'm Rasha McChesney.